Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Dave, and I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram, Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. This is Section A, the front page. The headline reads, "Is Midland ISD Heading Toward a Fiscal Cliff?" by Stuart Doreen. Is Midland ISD headed to a fiscal cliff? It appears that might be the case. District officials during recent budget workshops have talked about the 2024-25 school year and the drop in state funding that could put the district in a hole. How much of a hole? Well, the district estimates it is currently receiving funding amounts of $64.599 million in 2021 and $61.649 million in 2021-22. That amount is expected to top $62 million in both 2022-23 and 23-24. The money is called transition grant funding. It is connected with House Bill 3, the comprehensive school finance legislation passed in the 2019 legislative session. That legislation helped lower or compress property tax rates in districts across the states. However, less money coming into state coffers couldn't mean less money going back to districts. So HB 3 included a mechanism designed to provide a source of temporary transition aid to school districts and charter schools that receive less than the threshold amount of state and local funding under HB 3. This formula transition grant mechanism, according to the district, establishes a revenue target for each school district and charter school equal to the lesser of 103% of the maintenance and operations funding per student the district slash school would have received under the law prior to HB 3, or 128% of state average maintenance and operations funding per student under the law prior to HB 3. Midland ISD reports the amount of transition grant funding this past year was far and away the most of any district in the state, nearly double second place Fort Bend ISD, and more than three times the amount received by fourth place Mansfield ISD. If a school district or charter school's maintenance and operations revenue per student under HB 3 is less than its revenue target, formula transition grant aid for that year is provided in an amount equal to the difference per student, MISD officials told the Reporter Telegram. That is the reason for these temporary $60 million plus payments annually. To examine why the term fiscal cliff might be used by district officials, one should look at the percent of the transition funding compared to the total maintenance and operations M&O expenditures. In budget workshop in April, Midland ISD officials talked about total expenditures of $372.7 million. That includes $103.39 million in recapture payments, money sent to the state as part of the so-called Robin Hood school finance system to be distributed to poorer school districts. Take out the recapture money, and Midland ISD is looking at $269.316 million in leftover expenditures. The $61.649 million in transition grant funded pays around 22.89% of the expenditures remaining. Those estimated expenditures included $3.325 million for campuses, $43.538 million for departments, $5.668 million for utilities, $33.556 million for partnerships, $173.956 million for salaries and benefits, and $9.271 million for the Teacher Retirement System of Texas. Again, the formula transition grant mechanism expires at the end of the 2023-24 school year. So that revenue line item goes from more than $60 million to zero. This is not bonus money, but rather the dollars the district uses to fund day-to-day operations, stated Ilana Ladd, chief communications officer for the district. Ladd and Daryl Dodds, chief financial officer for the district, both said it is not as if the district has an extra $60 million lying around not being used. The fiscal cliff has district officials planning for what's coming. Superintendent Angelica Ramsey has told the board that her style of leadership requires projections 5 and 10 years out and then making long-term plans to adjust to what the information tells her. She said she has worries about a drop in transition grant funding. There are programs in place that we don't want to have to eliminate, she said. Ramsey wants to get to the spring of 2024 and not have to make massive cuts. The potential fiscal cliff could impact the number of people employed by the district, the number one expenditure the district has. A proposed budget from April shows salaries and benefits make 64.36%, or nearly two-thirds, of expenditures once the required recapture payment is paid. Midland ISD staff told the district during a recent budget workshop that the number of teachers increased from 1,490 in 2019-20 to 1,610 in 2021. Even with a reduction of around 1,000 students to the total population inside the district, there are no plans in the 2021-22 budget to lower the teacher population, which the district stated has grown by around 16% over the last decade. Still, Ramsey said that future plans will address the fiscal cliff. She has promised, as part of her entry plan, a restructuring that shows more resources given to the district's 40 campuses and shows that central office becomes more of a service center to principals, teachers, and students. This article is entitled, Bill Introduced by Pfluger Aims to Expand Liquid Natural Gas Exports. Increased exports would provide new markets for Permian Basin natural gas, by Mella McEwen. The Permian Basin is hundreds of miles from the nation's seaports, but boosting exports overseas will be an economic boon to the landlocked region. Representative August Pfluger, the Republican who represents Midland as part of his District 11, and Representative Henry Cuellar, the Democrat whose District 28 includes Laredo, Mission, and San Antonio, have teamed up to introduce the Natural Gas Export Expansion Act to expand expedited approval of liquefied natural gas export permit applications. I'm excited about this bill, Pfluger told the reporter Telegram in a telephone interview Monday afternoon. He noted that he sits on the Foreign Affairs Committee, and fellow members may wonder what energy exports have to do with foreign affairs. He explained that there are countries, particularly in Eastern Europe, Romania, Latvia, Lithuania, to name a few, that need U.S. oil and gas products. We need to get the federal government out of the way and let private companies export to any country that's not subject to sanctions or trade restrictions, he said. The bill has garnered bipartisan support from the industry and from both Republicans and Democrats in the House. And Pfluger said he is working to build more industry support, as well as support from Senate Democrats and Republicans, to the companion bill introduced by Senator Ted Cruz. Industry associations like the Permian Basin Petroleum Association have offered their support for the bill. Ben Shepard, PBPA president, said in a statement when Pfluger and Cuellar introduced the bill, "The Permian Basin is the most prolific oil-producing region in the world and is the second-largest natural gas producer in the United States. The Natural Gas Export Expansion Act will help to fully utilize the Permian Basin's natural gas resources as a national security tool, promote safer and cleaner natural gas, and expand worldwide markets for Permian Basin natural gas. These efforts will also help to reduce global emissions. It involves educating Democrats and explaining why promoting LNG exports by cutting red tape, regulations, and the time it takes to build and put a facility online benefits the country," he said. It supports not just our economy, but the billions of people around the world without reliable power, he said. There are 800 million people without electricity. That's 1/8 of the planet's population. This addresses energy poverty. Pfluger said he believes the bill has a chance of being enacted into law. I've had a few conversations with the administration, and they are concerned about our trade alliances, he related. This could help the Permian Basin, but the administration can also see this has tangible benefits in helping our trading partners and allies. The Permian Basin could directly benefit by having increased access to markets for natural gas, which in turn would reduce flaring, he added. Pfluger acknowledged he has concerns about the Biden administration's actions regarding the oil and gas industry. For example, he said he is very concerned about the revocation of the permits for the Keystone XL pipeline, which he said has cost thousands of jobs. We have to be able to show the impact of those actions, he said. The Export Expansion Act, as well as an earlier bill to bar the federal government from enacting bans or moratoriums on oil and gas leasing or drilling permits on federal lands, are actions Pfluger said he was elected to take. The way he sees it, he's fighting not just for his district, but for the country, calling oil and gas an important part of the nation's gross domestic product and vital to national security. I'm committed to our national security, and there's nothing more important to our security than providing oil and gas, he said. This article is entitled, Commissioners Hope to Complete Veterans Memorial After 3-Year Delay, by Caitlin Randall. About 3 years after the planned unveiling date, the Gratitude Square Veterans Memorial being built near the Midland County Annex building might be finished this summer. The project aimed at honoring local people who have served in the military and Gold Star families was approved in February 2018 with a targeted opening 6 months later. On Monday, the Midland County Commissioners Court approved $70,000 for paving, fencing, and other work to complete the site. I'm glad the Commissioners Court was amicable in putting money towards it, said County Judge Terry Johnson. I feel really confident that we can get it done. Most of the delay was because commissioners in 2018 had intended to fund the project almost entirely with donations, Johnson said. He said the court had budgeted about $300,000 for what was estimated to be a $1.5 million project. Invoices provided by the county auditor's office show the county spent about $250,000 from 2018 to 2019 on steel, granite walls, and other materials for constructing the memorial. The project was also delayed because there was difficulty in getting access to the names of all local veterans, Johnson said. He said that issue has been resolved, and most names have now been carved into the granite at the site. The memorial will feature a 4-foot wall with veterans' names that will be accessible to those in wheelchairs. Flagpoles, pergolas, ground coverings, and other pieces representing military service, according to a previous Reporter-Telegram article. Some final work on the project will include closing off additional entrances that won't be used by those visiting the site, and installing light fixtures that connect to wires running underneath the structure. Gratitude Square will be located near the annex parking lot facing West Scarborough Drive. Johnson said the memorial will be completed in the next 2 to 3 months. This article is entitled, Pastor Fu Recognized. Colson Center Honors China Aid Leader. The Colson Center honored Midland's Bob Fu as the William Wilberforce Award recipient during the Wilberforce Weekend in the Metroplex. Fu is founder and president of China Aid, a Christian human rights organization committed to promoting religious freedom and the rule of law in China. China Aid works to expose systemic persecution, harassment, torture, and imprisonment of Chinese Christians and human rights lawyers in China. It offers financial support to Chinese Christians persecuted by the Chinese government, and training for Christians and church leaders in China to help them defend their rights. A news release about the award noted, for the last several years, China has become more aggressive to both the outside world and to its own people, particularly the people of Hong Kong, the Muslim Uyghur population, and of course Christians. While other countries may rank higher on Open Doors World Watch List, the economic might, global clout, and sheer population size of China make its treatment of religious minorities a matter of enormous concern. The history behind this growing and troubling reality was one that forged the life, testimony, and word of Pastor Bob Fu. Pastor Fu will become the latest recipient of the William Wilberforce Award, a recognition established by Chuck Colson to honor modern-day heroes committed to Christ and just causes, as was the famous British abolitionist for whom the award is named. The Colson Center for Christian Worldview, according to its website, equips Christians to live out their faith with clarity, confidence, and courage in this cultural moment. This article was written by Stuart Doreen, Reporter Telegram editor. This article is entitled COVID Cases Down to Lowest Total in Nearly 1 Year by Stuart Doreen. The Midland Health Department reported 52 COVID cases in Midland County last week. It was the fewest number of weekly cases this calendar year and was the lowest total since early June 2020. The health department also showed a second 20+% drop in cases in as many weeks. The 34.17% decline last week followed a 26.9% decline from May 9th to the 15th. The Midland Health Department reported less than 100 COVID-19 cases in Midland County last week. That was a 26.8% drop week over week. Other highlights from the weekly report included the number of active patients at Memorial Hospital on Monday morning was 9, down from 14 on May 18th. 2 of those 9 were on ventilators. Midland Health also reported 26 positive tests last week, a decrease of 20 week over week, and a positivity rate of 6.6% at its testing centers. The Midland Health Department reported an overall case count of 17,665 inside Midland County during the pandemic. There have been 255 COVID-19 related deaths. This section is called Local Briefs from Staff Reports. Midland man arrested for sexual assault outside El Jimador Bar and Grill. Cesar Barraza, 33, of Midland, was arrested and charged with sexual assault for allegedly raping a woman outside El Jimador Bar and Grill Friday night. The victim parked her car at El Jimador before she, her boyfriend, and Barraza went to El Mitote Sports Lounge later that night, according to Barraza's arrest affidavit. Barraza allegedly gave her a ride back to her vehicle after her boyfriend left her at El Mitote. The affidavit states the victim attempted to leave Barraza's car after arriving back at El Jimador, but he had locked her door. Barraza attempted to kiss the victim, and she said no, the affidavit states. He then allegedly told the victim, "I always get what I want," and raped her. The affidavit states the victim was unable to push off Barraza because he is 6'4" and 250 pounds, and she is 5'4" and 127 pounds. The victim escaped after the assault and ran to a nearby convenience store for help, according to the affidavit. The Midland Police Department was notified, and a SANE examination was completed at Midland Memorial Hospital. Barraza was arrested Saturday, the affidavit states. He is being held at Midland County Detention Center on a $250,000 bond. DPS. Midlander dies after truck collides with train near Stanton. A Midland man died Saturday morning after his vehicle collided with a train 7 miles east of Stanton in Martin County. The Department of Public Safety reported that Gary T. Carr, 56, was traveling west on the South Service Road of Interstate 20 near mile marker 163 around 3:30 a.m. DPS troopers reported Carr's Ford F-150 left the roadway, traveled across the grass median and onto the railroad tracks, where it collided with a westbound train. He was not wearing a seatbelt. This is the Energy page. This article is entitled, Oil Surges Above $66, with Iran saying differences remain on sanctions deal. By Andres Guerra-Laws, Bloomberg. Oil climbed the most in a month after Iran said that gaps remain in negotiations aimed at reaching a deal to end U.S. sanctions on its crude. Futures rose 3.9% in New York on Monday, with added support from a weaker dollar, which makes commodities priced in the currency more attractive, and a rally in U.S. equities. Iran said there are still differences around the timing of when countries will return to compliance with the original 2015 nuclear agreement, allaying some concern about a rapid ramp-up in the Persian Gulf nation's output. While the market is anticipating the Islamic Republic's supply will pick up again by late summer, the demand recovery will be strong enough to absorb it. Goldman Sachs Group Inc. said, the bank expects Brent futures to hit $80 a barrel in the next few months. WTI for July delivery rose $2.47 to settle at $66.05 a barrel. Seasonally, we're coming into a strong demand period. Overwhelming concerns on supply, said Peter McNally, global head for industrials, materials, and energy at Third Bridge. With the U.S. continuing to reopen, air travel picking up, and Europe lifting pandemic-driven lockdowns, it's more than likely those barrels can get absorbed. Talks between Iran and world powers will continue in Vienna this week to resolve outstanding issues. As part of that process, Iran extended a United Nations nuclear inspections agreement, buying diplomats time to revive the landmark deal that would usher in an official return of the Permian Gulf nation to world oil markets. Statements over the weekend, in the time between the expiration of the old monitoring agreement and the signing of the new deal, made it clear that the sense of optimism over a deal that was pressuring prices last week was probably overdone, Bob Yager, head of the futures division at Mizuho Securities, said in a note. There is still a lot of work that needs to be done before a final agreement is finished. Global benchmark crude has been largely stuck between $60 and $70 a barrel since March, with concern about returning output and COVID-19 flare-ups counterbalanced by the demand recovery underway in some key markets. Virus cases in the U.S. were below 30,000 every day last week for the first time since June, and drivers are taking to the road again in parts of Europe, helping boost demand in the region. The discount for U.S. benchmark crude futures against Brent shrank on Monday to its narrowest since the end of November on a settlement basis. The smaller that discount becomes, the less attractive U.S. crude exports are to foreign buyers. Ahead of any agreement on a nuclear deal, Iran has already found buyers for its oil exports, notably China. Those ties may become even stronger, with the leaders of both countries speaking on the phone about Iran expanding its oil sales to China. Still, Goldman isn't alone in its view on the impact of returning Iranian supply. Citigroup Inc. said it expects only a partial return of the country's barrels initially. The bank still sees oil hitting the mid-70s in the third quarter, but said prices could retreat thereafter. Physical markets continue to get a boost from a raft of buying from refiners in Asia. Japan's Fuji Oil became the latest company to buy Middle Eastern crude on Monday after a spate of bullish interest last week. This is the obituary column, Tuesday, May 25th. Cecil Harvey Carr, Jr. Midland resident Cecil Harvey Carr Jr., 93, died May 22, 2021, with his beloved family at his side. Harvey was born on September 13, 1927, in Tyler, Texas, to Dorothy Frances Henderson and Cecil Harvey Carr Sr. He is preceded in death by his parents and his half-sister Brooksy Carr Randall and wife Marianne Thompson Carr. Marianne passed away on October 15, 1976. Harvey married on July 9, 1977, to Betty Janelle Fowler Baker. Harvey is survived by his wife, Janelle Carr, as well as his daughters, Sarah Newsom, Lynn, Susie Chandler, Mark, and Terry Carr, Jim Raleigh, and his stepchildren, Cindy Baker Miller, Bob, Hank Baker, Nikki, and Susan Baker Windsor, Mark. He is cherished by his 12 grandchildren and 8 great-grandchildren. Harvey will be laid to rest at a private family service. In lieu of flowers, please consider a donation to the National MS Society. With 100% matching by EOG Resources, or the charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelsh.com. Norma Jean Legg. Norma Jean Eden Legg passed away into our loving Lord's arms on Wednesday, May 12th in Dallas. She was born to Norman Bradley and Marjorie Vermel Eden on December 20th, 1928 in Sentinel, Oklahoma. Jean is survived by her son, John Legg, and daughter-in-law, Connie Legg of Flower Mound, her daughter, Ellen Jackson, and son-in-law, Leslie Jackson of Dallas, daughter, Emily Anderson, and son-in-law, Michael Anderson of Dallas, son, Houston Legg, and Mackenzie Best of Highland Village, 8 grandchildren, and 7 great-grandchildren. A family-only memorial service will be held at 2:30 p.m. at the Restland Funeral Home Chapel on Wednesday, May 26th. In lieu of flowers, send memorials to the charity of your choice. R. Clifford Banks. R. Clifford Banks, known to friends and family alike as Buzzy, passed away peacefully in his home on May 11th at the age of 103. He was born in 1917 in Kansas City, Missouri, to Rufus Clifford Banks and Jessie Marie Odell. He is survived by his son Richard Banks, Charles Gilbert, his daughter Ann Gilbert Wiley, 7 grandchildren, and 4 great-grandchildren. Jean McIntyre Banks and Mary Halsell Banks Leonard preceded him in death. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the Midland Memorial Foundation. A celebration of R.C. Banks' life will be held on Thursday, May 27th at 10 a.m., at the First Presbyterian Church in Midland, 800 West Texas Avenue, Midland. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Wells Funeral Home and Crematory. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Death notices. Humberto Ortiz. Humberto Ortiz passed away May 19th. Cremation services have been chosen. Family will receive friends Wednesday, May 26th from 12 p.m. to 7 p.m. with a memorial service starting at 7 p.m. at Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. He is survived by his brother Samuel Ortiz. Arrangements are entrusted to Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home. Melody A. Wagoner. Melody A. Wagoner, 63, of Terre Haute, Indiana, passed away on Thursday, May 20th. She lived in Midland, Texas, from 1981 until 1985. Funeral information is available at www.callahanandhughes.com. Nancy Mae Williamson Trice. Nancy Mae Williamson Trice, 77, of Stanton, passed away on May 18th at her home in Stanton. Nancy was born on June 11, 1943, to James and Ola Ruth Williamson Stiegel in Stanton, Texas. She is survived by three children, Carl Bohe, Chris Bohe, and Heidi Dragidja, seven grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren. She is preceded in death by her spouse, Bill Trice. There are no services at this time.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, May 25th, 2021. Pfluger introduces border protection bills. Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z at OAOA.com. A bill that would divert COVID-19 stimulus funds to reimburse local law enforcement agency efforts to protect the border are among several common sense bills recently introduced by Republican Congressman August Pfluger, Texas 11. A second bill would require the federal government to inform and coordinate with local government leaders in advance when placing immigrant youths in temporary detainment centers, like the ones set up in Midland and Pecos earlier this year, without community leaders' knowledge. These are pretty straightforward, common-sense bills, Pfluger said during a Monday afternoon phone interview. It will require the federal government to work with local government and do things like provide weekly updates. The federal government hasn't been very transparent. It's almost embarrassing. All we're talking about is good communication that will help protect communities and the kids. Pfluger was one of many state and local leaders who were upset when the federal government secretly began transporting immigrant youths and lodging them in hastily set up detainment centers in Midland and other Texas communities. Federal officials continuously rebuffed inquiries from Pfluger and local leaders who wanted to know how many youths were being detained in Midland, how long they would be detained, and refused requests to visit the centers. In Midland, there were ministers and other people in the community who wanted to help, but they couldn't because of the federal government, Pfluger said, noting people wanted to make sure the youth had adequate clothing, hygiene products, and other basic supplies. Pfluger said he's not yet sure which committees the bills will be sent to for review. The first bill will likely be sent to multiple committees, like Homeland Security and a COVID-related committee. Now it's up to the committees, said Pfluger, who expressed concern that one or both bills could be stalled or die at the committee level. Pfluger and other Republican legislators admit they will have an even tougher challenge passing a proposed alternative budget for fiscal year 2022. Pfluger last Wednesday announced his support for the budget proposed by the Republican Study Committee. Democrats have only been in charge for 5 months, and they are already wrecking our economy, Pfluger said. Inflation is rising, job growth is stalling, the national debt continues to skyrocket, and House Democrats continue to wrongly pursue trillions in crippling tax hikes that will harm Texas farmers and ranchers, businesses, and families. Pfluger said the Republican budget proposal would balance the federal budget and cut spending by $14.4 trillion in 10 years, reduce taxes on American families by $1.9 trillion. The proposal is straightforward, Pfluger said. It's about not spending more than what you're taking in. Pfluger said he and other Republicans will be lobbying their Democrat counterparts to support the proposal and take their argument to voters via the media and by visiting communities. I knew this was going to be a challenge, Pfluger said. It's unlikely House Speaker Nancy Pelosi will do anything fiscally responsible. It's going to take patience and getting out and talking to our constituents. We're going to have to show the American people this will work. two OC board members resigning. OA News at OAOA.com. Two longtime members of the Odessa College Board of Trustees are resigning from their spots, and members will consider the appointment of replacements at their 6 p.m. meeting today. The gathering will be held in the Zant Community Room of the Salisbury Campus Center. The board will consider the resignation of Trustee Neil Grape, place 6, and Board Chair Tommy Clark, place 9. Trustees also will consider the appointments of Hortensia Del Bosque to place 2 to replace the late Richard Abalos and Monty Garner for Grape's spot. Both terms end in 2025, the OC website says. Grape, a retired banker and CPA, said he has been on the board for 13 years, and Clark has been on for almost 10 years. "I just turned 84 years old," Grape said. "It's been a very enjoyable time being on that board, but the age I've reached now, it's time to step down." He added that he felt it was time for someone new to come on. Clark said he's resigning for personal reasons and that the resignations were not planned. "I've enjoyed my almost 10 years on this board. I think it's one of the best boards in the city of Odessa, in Ector County," Clark said. He and his wife are going to be spending more time at their lake home and want to take some time to travel. "We've been in Odessa 33 years. We're going to stretch out a little bit and find out what else is going on out there before we can't. I did not want to halfway do that job, and specifically being the chair of the board, we spend a lot of time in committees and stuff like that, and I just didn't want to miss all that and still be on the board, so I chose to just resign rather than just do it halfway," Clark said. He said after almost 10 years on the OC board, he has learned a lot. "I cannot tell you how much I've enjoyed it," Clark said. He added that the other board members accepted him like he knew what he was doing. He said he couldn't remember a time when they didn't get along. They would disagree, but they figured it out. "It's just that type of board. It's like a family. That's the type of board you want to be a part of," Clark said. He started his career in 1988 with Western Uniform and Towel Service. Ameripride bought Western Uniform in 1999, and Clark finished the rest of his 30-plus career with Ameripride, retiring in 2019 as vice president. He said he knows Del Bosque, who was a teacher at Odessa High School, and knows of Garner. Clark said both will be good board members. Also on the agenda is the reorganization of the board. Wood Health Sciences Building naming agreements. Review plan of finance, consolidated fund revenue bonds. Review and approve parameters resolution, authorizing issuance of consolidated fund revenue bonds. Appointing a representative of the district and delegating to the representative certain matters with respect to the sale of the bonds and the offering documents, and enacting other provisions relating to the issuance and sale of the bonds. Also, Wood Health Sciences Building naming agreements with Odessa Regional Medical Center and Grow Odessa. On the net, odessa.edu. Chamber event scheduled for June 3rd by Federico Martinez, FMARTINEZ at OAOA.com. The Odessa Chamber of Commerce will meet at 11 a.m. June 3rd for a combined annual meeting, luncheon, and awards banquet, which will include recognition of their Entrepreneur of the Year and Business Hall of Fame. The event is open to the public and will be held at the Odessa Marriott Hotel and Conference Center. Both events are being combined this year due to COVID-19, which caused the chamber to postpone the annual meeting in October, said Lynn Van Amberg, Director of Operations for the Odessa Chamber of Commerce. This year's event will also feature a special tribute to former Congressman Mike Conaway, who retired earlier this year after serving 15 years. There's going to be a lot going on, Van Amberg said. This is our first open event since COVID. We'll be introducing the board to everyone and recognizing the many volunteers, the unsung heroes who make it possible to do what we do. Added Van Amberg, there are so many people that work hard to make Odessa such a great town to live and celebrate. Those being honored this year will include Entrepreneur of the Year, Mike Withrow, Basin Abstract and Title. New Business Hall of Fame inductees will be Phil Fush, Rex Coe, Roy Gillian, Barndoor Steakhouse and South 40 Catering, Rodney Hurt, Rodney Hurt Insurance Services, and Ron Kirby, Ron Kirby CPA. For more information or to purchase tickets to attend the event, contact Van Amberg at lynnva@odessachamber.com or visit www.odessachamber.com. Individual reserve tickets are $75, $800 for a reserve table of eight, or $1,000 event sponsor packages, which includes a reserve table of eight, company name on sponsor sign and program, and special recognition in all advertising. Face masks will be required until attendees are seated at their table. On the net, odessachamber.com. 479 days. For 479 days, the city has fought a lawsuit brought by the Odessa American to enforce the state law that guarantees the public's right to see basic police records. Through January 6th, the city has spent $112,138.47 of taxpayers' dollars to fight releasing information on crime in Odessa. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County, 17,379 total cases, 375 deaths. ECISD daily cases, 0 students, 1 staff. Midland County, 17,614 total cases, 271 deaths. Texas, 2,941,389 total cases, 51,225 deaths. U.S. cases, 32,947,548 total confirmed, and 587,342 deaths. Find out more at covidinthebasin.com or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. See the ECISD COVID-19 dashboard at tinyurl.com/Y6NTPTUQ. Quick hits. 12-step study. Freedom for the Basin has scheduled Stepping into Freedom at 7 p.m. today at Odessa First Assembly, 1101 North Lee Avenue. This Christian 12-step study takes these life-changing principles back to the biblical foundations where they were born. Approved by Ector County Adult Probation and Odessa District Parole. Open to the entire community regardless of church membership or attendance. Visit tinyurl.com/PK244BHC. Memorial Wall. The Texas Fallen Heroes Memorial Wall Ceremony has been scheduled from 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Saturday in the Dillard's Plaza at the MCM Mall, 4101 East 42nd Street. The wall will also be displayed throughout the weekend. sponsorships are available: $500 gold, $250 silver, and $100 bronze. Masks are recommended as well as social distancing, but are not required for in-person attendance. In addition, a Veterans Memorial Service will take place at noon, May 31st, at Ector County Cemetery, 300 South Dixie Boulevard. To donate, to volunteer, or more information, call Jesse Porras, 432-770-9423. From Staff Reports. Closing prices: posted, $62.53. Futures, $66.05. Natural gas, $2.886. Benchmark U.S. rose $2.47 to $66.05 per barrel on the New York Mercantile Exchange. Field Day. Photos by Jacob Ford, Odessa American. Maine. University of Texas of the Permian Basin's STEM Academy first grader girls compete in a tug of war with the boys during an elementary field day Monday morning at UTPB Park. Activities included a tire roll race, chicken toss, 50-meter dash, bounce house, lunch, and more. Above left, University of Texas of the Permian Basin's STEM Academy second grader Irene Huerta, 8, rolls a tire in a race during an elementary field day Monday morning at UTPB Park. Above right, a University of Texas of the Permian Basin's STEM Academy kindergarten class plays a parachute game during an elementary field day Monday morning at UTPB Park. University of Texas of the Permian Basin's STEM Academy second grader Apollo Harris, 8, in a 50-meter dash against Devin Hernandez, 8, during an elementary field day Monday morning at UTPB Park. Activities included a water relay, chicken toss, 50-meter dash, bounce house, lunch, and more. City swimming pools. OA News at OAOA.com. City aquatic centers will open from 1 p.m. to 7 p.m. Saturday and close August 1st. Each pool will close one day per week for maintenance and heavy-duty cleaning purposes. Sherwood closed Wednesday. Woodson closed Tuesday. Floyd Gwynn closed Thursday. The spray grounds will operate daily. Admission is free to the Jurassic Park, UTPB, and McKinney Spray Ground. Biggest change this year is no cash accepted on site, credit/debit cards only. Includes admissions and concession stands. For rules, reservations, or more information, visit tinyul.com/kyuns268. Council to vote on $8.3 million animal shelter by Federico Martinez, F-M-A-R-T-I-N-E-Z at OAOA.com. The Odessa City Council is expected to vote today to approve an $8,308,472 contract with Onyx Contractors to oversee construction of a new city animal shelter. Police Chief Michael Gerke explained during last week's work session that the current facility is too small and not equipped to provide the care needed. "The current facility was built as a pound over 30 years ago," said Gerke, whose department oversees shelter operations. "It was built to house dogs and cats for 2 to 3 days, and then they were euthanized. But things have changed. We're asking for a facility that's more conducive to adopting." The proposed new 20,538-square-foot facility, which will be constructed just east of the current shelter, would be paid for with funds from Certificate of Obligation bonds that the council approved in 2019, according to city documents. The $10 million earmarked for the new animal shelter was part of an overall $93 million bond that is being used for other projects also. The new shelter will cost about $1.7 million less than originally projected, Gerke told council last week. Mayor Javier Hoven last week asked city administrators if the leftover $1.7 million could be used to help pay for other infrastructure projects, such as renovating the city's aging water treatment plant. Assistant City Manager of Administrative Services, Cindy Muncy, explained that the bond dollars can legally only be used for what they were originally planned for. In this case, a new animal shelter and fire station. If approved by council, the new animal shelter would be constructed just east of the current shelter, Gerke said. Because of the current shelter's limited space, many dogs and cats that arrive have to be euthanized immediately because there isn't space to keep them separated from the rest of the animals, Gerke explained. A larger, more modern facility would be able to house more cats and dogs and allow for more adoption opportunities and provide better care for the animals, he said. Councilwoman Deidre White has previously expressed concern that the current outdated facility has many problems besides its small size. The facility is plagued with ongoing plumbing problems and lacks an adequate cooling system, which makes the shelter very hot and humid most of the year. I know we're talking about a lot of money, White said, but we're not talking about building a Taj Mahal for dogs and cats. We're talking about building a new shelter that has more room, that's animal and people friendly, and promotes adoption. County's financial picture drawn. Gardner says employees may get a raise in 2021-22. OA News at OAOA.com. Ector County Commissioners today will consult department heads about the 2021-22 budget and make long-range plans for the brightening post-pandemic age. Precinct 1 Commissioner Mike Gardner said Monday that increased economic activity this spring, and possibly for the rest of fiscal 2020-21, may mean there will be money for employees' raises and infrastructure improvements next year. Gardner said Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton's early April denial of the city of Odessa's bid to snag some of the county's revenues from its new rural sales tax had bolstered his optimism. Things will always be tight, he said. Mainly, we will have everybody get their costs together and see what we're looking at. My property valuation is up 8%, so even if we don't raise the tax rate at all, we will still have an increase. The sales tax is going along pretty well, and my thought is that next year's economy will be pretty good. The commissioners budgeted for $12 million in sales tax revenues for the fiscal year that began last October 1st, after collecting $17.5 million during 2019-20, but they have said recently that the total may end up exceeding $14 million this year. The county's current property tax rate is 36.9 cents per $100 in valuation. In other business, in the 10 a.m. meeting at the 1010 East 8th Street Administration Building, the court will hear Texas Department of Transportation spokesman Gene Powell's report on a TxDOT survey of Loop 338 and its road construction plans in the county. The court will also hear a presentation by Ector County Utility District President Tommy Irvin, who cut the ribbon May 20th on a desalination system at 5016 Johnson Road in West Odessa that will remove pollutants from oil field water. consider appointing Precinct 3 Commissioner Don Stringer to the Airport Board that sets policy for Odessa-Schlemmer Field operations. Consider a contract for the Austin law firm of Bickerstaff, Heath, Delgado, and Acosta to start the process of political redistricting based on last year's census. Discuss extending the County Health Department's contract with the Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center at El Paso to August 31st, 2023. Consider a ground lease contract between the airport and the Patterson-Rosedale Highway Company of Bakersfield, California. Discuss contracts for the county clerk's office with the Tyler Technologies Eagle Division of Plano for software services and Cofile Technologies of Dallas for the digitization of documents. Hear Human Resources Director Donna James' proposal to hold a service awards luncheon that was postponed in February. Consider hiring a temporary clerical and data entry employee for James's office. Man charged with choking roommate. OA News at OALA.com. A 57-year-old man was arrested after he reportedly choked his roommate. Daniel Subia was charged with assault by strangulation or suffocation, family violence, a third-degree felony. The reported assault happened May 18th at the Woodview Apartments, located at 4330 North Grandview Avenue, an Odessa Police Department probable cause affidavit stated. Sarah Nicole Taylor reportedly told police that her roommate, Subia, had assaulted her. Taylor stated that Subia placed his arm around her neck and impeded her normal breathing for 10 seconds. Taylor stated that she couldn't breathe. Officers saw minor injuries on Taylor's neck and shoulders, which were consistent with her statement, the affidavit stated. Taylor reportedly continued to tell officers the assault started when she was looking for her clothes that she believed to be inside Subia's bedroom. Subia reportedly became upset and assaulted Taylor. Officers attempted to make contact with Subia at the front door of the apartment, the affidavit stated. Subia didn't answer the door. The door was deadbolt locked from the inside. Investigation reportedly showed that Taylor has been living with Subia as roommates for 1 year. Subia was arrested and booked into the Ector County Law Enforcement Center on May 20th, jail records show. He has one bond totaling $9,000 and was still in custody as of Monday afternoon. OC hosting summer camps. OA News at OAOA.com. Featuring something for everyone, Odessa College's summer camps are returning this year, starting June 7th and running through the first week of August. We did bring some camps back, not all of them yet, but we did bring some camps back, Director of Community Recreation Christine Williams said. Favorites like volleyball, conversational Spanish, and zombie preparedness are back. We are a little more robust than we were last year, which is exciting. And then hopefully by next summer, we'll be back to full strength, God willing, Williams said. There will be private swimming lessons this year, but not group lessons, and Williams said the camps are running at about half of what they normally would. The age range for the camps is from 5 to 16, but each camp has its own age limits. Masks are required. The summer will also include a new camp called the Fab Academy, where students will take advantage of Odessa College's Fab Lab. They will spend a week at the Fab Lab, and they will earn a certificate of completion, as well as they're actually going to be creating some showcase items that they will display for campus and community to see. And then they'll be able to take them home, Williams said. They're going to learn how to use 3D printers and different digital design systems. I think it's going to be awesome, and it's going to be able to serve a little bit older age range than what we normally do, she added. This is something completely different than we've ever done before, so I'm excited for this opportunity for kids to come and learn something totally new. Williams said she is looking forward to the summer festivities. I want to have the kids here already, Williams said. She added that she wants to hear the campers running around and having fun. Golf is currently full, but Williams said they are looking at adding a couple of spaces. Camp Run Amuck Us, an all-sports camp, and volleyball might be closed to be Camp Run Amuck Us, an all-sports camp, and volleyball might be close to being full, she said, and certain camps, like archery camp, only had two spots remaining at the time of the interview. It's where they go during the summer, Williams said. It's where they go have fun. She added that they get a chance to be introduced to college campus and find that it's a friendly place. It just becomes a second home for everybody, I think, which is a good thing, Williams added. On the net, tinyurl.com/y9w8j5t6.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.